Hello, welcome to Films Like the First Time.
Films Like the First Time.
We can't do that one.
Mm-mm.
I'm Dave, and with me is Nick and
Hi. The
lady who chose this movie, which is what?
The Last Unicorn. This is a treasure from my childhood, and I'm...
Your name is?
I thought I was going to introduce myself, and then Nick, or not Nick, Dave introduced you, so I got confused.
Yeah, I'm
Amanda.
Mixed it up.
The lady who picked out the movie.
I'm Amanda, the lady who picked out this wonderful childhood treasure gem of a film that these fools apparently didn't like.
We haven't even said what our feelings are. We haven't given scores yet.
Nick, you've been very obvious since you came over to record this podcast, your feelings on this movie. And I'm not saying
Are you doing the Clint Eastwood Gran Torino?
Right? Oh, we just rewatched a chunk of Gran Torino.
And I'm not saying that this movie is high cinema because it's not.
I can say that it was barely cinema when I was high. I
will say there
you
are
watched this
some,
movie high and didn't
oh
like
God.
It. It's at least trippy enough to enjoy
no,
while
because,
intoxicated.
Because it's complete lack of sense.
It was pretty straightforward. It
plot,
wasn't a lot of
except
laughing.
For the fact that it lacked any logic.
I will say, plot aside, it is a beautifully made movie.
I like the animation.
Yeah, it's
the
great animation.
It definitely looked like I wouldn't have guessed 82. It looked
well. You know what I really liked was the opening credits animation, where they actually they took and did layers of it and did a pan with the camera.
It made it sort of seem like it was like an old shadow.
Like a diorama or something. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
The art was very medieval inspired too. Mostly the way the animals were drawn, because a lot of people drew those animals.
So
a lot of medieval animals are
lions.
Real weird looking.
Yeah.
Well, it very much looked like Sword in the Stone or something like that.
Sure.
At least as far as how everyone is dressed. We start the movie with the random two dudes riding around the forest.
Robin Hood and the Wizard. That's what they looked like.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But then we get Robin Hood later on, so
yeah,
we know it's not
that
Robin
off.
Hood.
Yeah. But ruined my name.
I never thought it was Robin Hood.
Well, he's wearing the green hat.
Yeah. And he's got a bow.
And tights, I think.
Yeah.
That's just how they dressed back then.
They did not all wear tights.
In this fictional world.
That was Robin Hood.
Back then in this fictional world.
I don't know if you noticed this, Dave, but literally every man in this movie is wearing tights. Every single one.
I think one was wearing pajamas.
I mean, I think it was hard to notice the man pants when animals and inanimate objects had breasts all over them. So,
well, they weren't inanimate.
They started off inanimate.
they should have been inanimate. They should have been mute.
Yes,
this
movie, and I haven't obviously, 80s kids movies, 70s kids movies were very different from what we get nowadays. And this one might actually win for most tits in a child's film.
This movie was thirsty in the weirdest ways.
There's more sex with what should have been inanimate objects implied in this movie than Evil Dead.
I mean, the first thing we get with the unicorn,
a tree raped somebody in that movie, and then this is and
there's
this
no
is even
actual
more
sex in this movie.
Look,
there's plenty of supposition.
Yeah, the first scene with the unicorn that we get is with the George R. R. Martin looking butterfly that doesn't understand consent. It's literally fondling the unicorn's horn as it's like, ooh.
Okay, so we get these two.
It does do a little pole dance slide down her horn.
Yeah, and she's even like, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like, yeah.
That's something that everyone should have been saying most of the time. What the fuck is going on? Because, here, let me consult my notes. Who the fuck are these dudes in the forest? And how does one of them know that there happens to be a unicorn in the forest?
They literally explain that, Dave.
Do they?
Why were they?
What's the explanation?
Why were they, the one dude that knows, why did he take the other guy hunting in the forest where they can't hunt?
Here's the thing. This movie is for small children. So
I think it's for small brain
children.
Trying
to apply a lot of logic to it is silly.
It's
they went into the forest. This is all exposition to be like, see this? Have you ever noticed?
It's a device.
Why?
We know.
Yes. Why? Well, but I'm explaining to Dave
and this device
he apparently
is very
it.
Heavy and hurts being hit over the head.
But
with
it is. It's very
so
heavy-handed. He literally says, "We're not going to find any animals to hunt in this forest. A unicorn definitely lives here. What? Unicorns aren't real."
And that's an explanation.
Yes. Will you shut up and let me finish? Yes. Unicorns live here. Have you ever noticed why it's always spring? Why all of these things happen? Let's just leave.
Can I say the
That's
people...
That's the explanation. It's right there.
The people in this
sentences.
Movie...
That is not an explanation. That is a guess.
The people in this movie, like the human people, are all incredibly dumb, except for my friend Schmendrick.
Smorgasbord?
Well, I almost called him say? Dorcas because I named him Dorcas in my notes, and we haven't gotten to him yet, but yeah, Schmendrick. In fact, that was one of the things that pissed me off is how no one treated Schmendrick with any kind of respect.
You know why? And I'll get to it.
Yeah, because his name is Schmendrick.
First, I want to get through past these two guys we never see again.
Yeah, that's sad that we never see them again.
Oh, is it? Because
I mean, it's weird.
Well, it is weird that two randos show up and quote unquote explain the.
Yeah, I mean, at least
this device.
At least in Robin Hood, the rooster shows up a few times again later in the movie.
Not for nothing. All right, so fine. Based on the fact that everything it's always spring and everything's green, they can't see fucking unicorns because they're men.
They're men, yeah.
And so you're just guessing. All right, fine. I'll even allow that. But then to turn around and say, well, you know, must be the last unicorn. We have no fucking basis for that statement.
My criticism isn't even of their conversation. It's the fact that the last unicorn didn't know she was the last unicorn until that guy said
yes, it. That's next.
She's like, wait, I'm the last one?
And also, before we get to that opening song is so fucking terrible.
I didn't dislike the music as much as you. It wasn't my thing.
Well, I'm going to not harp on that so much now. I'll sum all that up later.
Fair enough.
As to the reasons why I have a problem with it. And it's not just the quality.
I just put Q80s intro song because that's just what it felt
It doesn't
like.
Even sound like that. I literally wrote, this sucks so bad I don't even have a comparison. But then I came up with one about 10 minutes later.
Also, and this is the first time we get the sound quality of it, but for some reason, when they have the unicorn having inner dialogue, it sounds like she's on the telephone.
Well, I was also confused as to when that was. Because at first, I was like, wait a minute.
Is this
all of a sudden now
bad?
Her lips aren't moving? Like, what is going on? Again, I was high. So, to be fair.
I figured out it was the inner monologue pretty quick. But, like, yeah, it's like it's so tinny sounding.
I didn't really think about that so much.
Yeah.
But that's not where my nitpicks are going to come
from. I understood the
from.
Choice of wanting to have it different to be for the inner monologue. But it was, like, it was hard to hear. And, like, I don't know. It was a little weird.
I didn't have any trouble hearing it as a kid or as an adult. I get what you're saying about the difference in sound, but yeah, I'm sure that was an intentional choice.
No, I'm sure it was definitely
her,
an intentional choice.
This is in her monologue. This is her actually talking to people.
Nah,
she's a metalhead.
She just added extra
that's
lines
why it's tinny.
Via phone call later on, and that's what...
Well, there were definitely some edits and or changes with voices in this movie that you'll notice later, going back to Dave's criticisms of some of the musical numbers.
Is
Mia Farrow not a singer?
Mia Farrow,
Jeff Bridges.
But Mia Farrow was bad enough that they literally replaced her later in the movie.
Yeah, they kept Jeff Bridges singing.
Well, is the unicorn supposed to be so insufferably whiny?
The unicorn is supposed to be non-human. She doesn't experience human emotions. That's kind of the point.
Honestly, she didn't bother me so much until she wasn't a unicorn anymore.
Well, she bothered me because Mia Farrow's voice hurts me in a lot of different ways. And it did remind me of when I had to watch The Great Gatsby in high school and I got myself thrown out of class just so I wouldn't have to watch any more of it.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. I mean, that's a little bit of a next level kind of thing.
Yeah, wow. Okay, so if Neil Young joined the band Chicago, that would be America.
But I like Neil Young.
Yeah, but if he joined Chicago...
I don't care.
It wouldn't even Chicago. It wouldn't even have all the high-pitched nonsense of Peter Cetera. It would just be bland and whatever. All right, fine. It's unfair to say that about Neil Young. You're right.
Thank you.
I
also don't dislike America as much as you do. I don't. They're not somebody I go out and listen to. They're not a band that I'm like, oh, that's a good song.
Is it because were they chosen for this just because their biggest song ever was about a horse that had no name? And they're like, hey, you guys are great with that.
Why don't you know.
And now they didn't write this music.
The music definitely
maybe they were
had,
fans of the book. This movie is based on a book from the 60s.
Well, there was a different like a guy who wrote like some actual classic songs wrote the soundtrack and they performed it. So I don't know exactly I think
what they were trying to go for was like
I don't want to talk too much about this right now.
Sweeping epic is what they were trying to do with the music.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
Like a little bit minstrelly, but
but also very American.
Did you say
feeling.
Menstrually?
Minstrelly.
The whole movie's about menstruation. Let's get to that point.
Okay. All right.
It's about puberty.
So yeah, there's no prologue to anything.
So the prologue is the two guys.
The two dudes that can't see unicorn, one of them decides there must be one in the forest. And that if there is one, it must be the last one in existence. The unicorn, having seemingly never considered it, becomes obsessed with the idea that she is the last one in existence. Fair? I'm trying to explain.
Yeah.
An old woman kidnaps the unicorn as a freak show attraction and because it's probably the only one in existence.
Good old Mommy Fortuna.
Okay.
Voiced by Angela Lansbury.
I know, but I'm just trying to say that they really hammer you with this last.
Oh, the last thing. Yeah.
Where, and again, how does anyone know this? Is this whole universe just a shitty little town?
I mean, no, because we've got like 5 travel montages that show that they've traveled thousands of miles in this movie.
There can't be any other unicorn anywhere else. We don't...
I mean, I think it's a lore thing. I think
it's
common
definitely
lore
a lore thing. Like,
that
there are
there's
people,
only one left.
There are people that have seen them, that know what they are, or that have heard of them, growing up hearing about them, and still believe in them.
I will say that the fact that everyone else was harping on that it's the last unicorn didn't bother me as much as her own lack of awareness of that.
Even as like a 6-year-old or however old I was when I first saw this movie, I thought that was weird. Like, yeah. how did she not know? But then rewatching it as an adult, I'm like, okay, so they kind of explain like the unicorns in their forest. So it's almost like each forest at one point had a unicorn. So they were kind of like self-contained and they're immortal also. So because they're immortal, like for humans... It might have been 70 years since the bull drove the unicorns into the sea, but for an immortal,
sure,
it was 10, 15 minutes ago. You know what I mean?
It's still, yes, and I get that. And it still kind of felt like the lack of awareness of the people around him, like kind of like Zach Galifianakis in The Hangover.
Also, this movie is for small children.
Yes.
It is written for that level of kids.
I understand
it's
that.
It's not an adult movie.
We have grown up at a time when we saw not just the advent of Pixar, which changed what children's movies are.
Yes,
completely,
and I was an adult
but
when
also,
those came
I
out.
Was going to say,
but,
what are we talking about?
But now, also the 90s run of Disney movies. You know, things like Aladdin and The Lion King and, you know, The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, where they were all well-made children's movies with, like, cohesive plots and thought processes. And so, like, this... Even The Land Before Time feels more put together than this.
See, when I go back and watch a lot of these favorites, like The Lord of the Rings, which is, I think, the same animators as this movie.
The Hobbit was.
The Hobbit, The Secret of Nim, all of those movies, they all feel very abbreviated.
Yes, The
Hobbit
does feel that way.
Like, there's not a lot of character development. It's story plot, 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 some music, plot, plot, music. Like, it's not a lot of character development. You don't, it's, but it's because it's for like 6, 7, 8 year olds, which most of us at the time,
I guess it's,
we couldn't sit still for 2 hour epic movies. Part of the thing
that bothers me about that is this is the kind of movie that kind of reminds me of like people that talk down to kids. Like that are, you know, talk to kids like they don't know what they're what's going
but
on.
But as an adult, I watch this movie and find so many little tidbits in it that I really relate to, like so many moments, even though it's not a grand sweeping arc of character development. It might just be a moment, but it's still like, oh, damn.
Fun spots in this movie, mostly revolving around a cat.
There's no...
I love that cat is old, haggardy pirate cat.
Look, we're way ahead on the cat.
Still just like rubbing and loving and wanting his belly rubbed as a cat would do.
I mean, the cat's the MVP of the movie, but we should probably like actually get back to where we were, which is still the first scene in the movie.
No, I moved ahead to...
Before we get to
Mommy Fortuna, they have this opening sequence where they're showing all the animals in the forest, and they show this squirrel, and it just traps that one tear. I'm like, oh my god. Oh my god.
Well, just all the... she decides she's going to leave the forest, you see all of the animals sadly... watching her go. Because they know, now that they don't have a unicorn anymore, people are going to be able to come and hunt and pillage that forest. Also, and she's like the most magical thing ever.
The other thing I noticed before we get to Mommy Fortuna, a couple things, actually. So her name is Unicorn until she becomes a girl, right?
She doesn't have a name.
Well, they just call it,
Yeah, she's the unicorn.
Which is a little weird, because then what happens when all the unicorns are hanging out together? It's like, hey, unicorn! Well, everybody turns around.
But you don't understand, Nick, because there are no other unicorns, because she's the last one.
Well,
this movie's the invention of lying, where everybody just takes one fucking person's word on everything.
Man, I wish that movie was better.
I mean, I agree.
Yeah, because it had a great premise.
Great concept.
Yeah.
Which you said your neuroses about it, but she does spend like 2 full minutes questioning, what do these men know about unicorns?
Yeah, that's how we get the horny butterfly.
One man's tale about unicorns, like they're just stupid men. Yeah,
and then she's got kind of a savior complex about it though. She's like, I'm going to go save the other unicorns, and like it just feels like very like.
Well, it's naive. I mean, clearly, just has never been out of that forest and has no idea what to expect.
So then we get that the first montage of her leaving the forest, and it reminded me actually of Barbie.
Okay, I could see that.
The travel montage in Barbie, of them leaving the Barbie land. It made me think of that for some reason, which was kind of funny and fun in that sense. And then, we get the old farmer trying to rope her, which I'm like... He took his belt off to try to catch her. And I'm like, this is real creepy.
That scene, as an adult watching that scene, I'm like, this is the way he's talking to her about how beautiful she is and come here, little filly, while he's got his belt off. It was very strange to watch. And I don't know if there was any creepy intention behind that, but it reads oddly
now. It's definitely not the only time.
And then, like, I love the animation in this, but, like, the one thing that caught me was then, like, at one point she's, like, coming down a mountain or something and an eagle flies off. Mm-hmm. And the eagle is, like, fully, like, bent over, like it's got scoliosis.
The animation of the birds in this was a little weird. Like, the harpy later is the same, well, and I'm like,
let's talk about the
harpy should have had way bigger wings for as big of a bird as it is.
Boobs.
You know what? The tits didn't bother me. I feel like that's something actually out of mythology.
Well, I think it's something out of Total Recall.
Well, you're both correct in this case. Because a harpy also has a person's face.
Yeah. And that one had like
instead it just had a vulture face and tits.
And a vulture's tits. 3 vulture tits hanging out.
You know what? And I'll be honest, those weren't the tits I noticed. I for some reason just it didn't.
Oh my god.
Well, you know what? It's because he's in the cage most of the time. And so
the first time you see him are in the cage. And at first I'm like, wait, was that two or really three? And then, yeah, the second time I looked, I'm like, yeah, that's three boobs, all right. I
definitely noticed the later boobs. But not yeah. Those
are the ones I remembered from but childhood.
But yeah, we meet Mommy
Fortuna.
Not Mama Fortuna, Mommy Fortuna.
Yes.
Which is just so weird to me.
I don't know why.
It just doesn't ring the right way.
It sounds like a porn name.
Mommy
Fortuna.
We meet her and
she only does lesbian.
The one assistant who's interesting and weird and creepy and Dorcas.
He's basically Igor.
Yeah. And then the Dorcas Schmendrick, which I literally wrote down his name. Like I'm like, I'm gonna call this guy Dorcas, and then like 2 seconds later he's like, my name is Schmendrick, and I'm like, of course it is.
Of course it is.
Like Schmendrick the Dungeon Master. Because he just looks like somebody who's been playing Dungeons and Dragons.
What a Schmendrick. Oh, man. Like, they did not conceal that. They're just like, we're going to call him Schmendrick. It's a little bit like Jack D. Ripper, to be honest.
Only, so you should like it.
Only without
I
it.
I didn't say I disliked the fact that they called him Schmendrick.
Yeah, I don't think it's really the same per se. It's more just... whatever. It seems like it does seem something Mel Brooks-ish, though.
I mean, it's very on the nose.
Yeah.
I mean, yes. Yeah, and then we see. What do we see? Where are we at? We're at this.
We're at Mommy Fortuna's.
Mommy Fortuna's.
Where everybody's a freak, but some of them are not real freaks.
They're phony freaks.
Yeah. So we go through. We see the show, where. The sidekick is introducing everybody.
Right.
Creatures of night brought to light. And all these horrific creatures.
I wish we'd gotten more of him, honestly.
Well, I said that when Schmendrick frees everybody, the henchmen should have killed him.
Yeah. It would have ended the movie.
No, it wouldn't have.
Yeah, because
you still got the unicorn.
Yeah, but not like the unicorn would have failed if it weren't for Schmendrick.
All right, but I'm just there's other things. Just saying.
No,
I liked him, and yeah, I wanted him to see more.
He was my second favorite weirdo of the movie.
Okay.
The harpy is the only character that isn't irritating because it doesn't talk.
Yeah, and it wants to kill everybody. It does talk. It does briefly. Yeah.
And the unicorn is kind of a demanding bitch.
Well, she's always been the most important thing for all of eternity. So, yeah. Right. And she is not encumbered by the trappings of human emotion, like, at all.
So, in other words, she's the V-lizards.
You know what bothered me about the unicorn's speech while I was in the cage? And then it did the right thing afterwards. But, like, it's talking to Schmendrick, and she's like, don't free the harpy. She's like, I have to free it. It's caged, and it's an immortal like me. And I'm like... all the animals are caged, and the only one you're talking about is the damn harpy. I mean, she did free the other animals, to give her credit, but at the time she's talking about them, she's, like, just completely ignoring the fact that it's a bunch of caged animals, not just the two. And that annoyed me a little bit.
Yeah, and that, well, you know why? Because mm-hmm. Schmendrick's going to let the other ones out. He's that's not going to open the harpy one.
And mm-hmm. I think that's probably more of it, more than... her not caring about the other animals. Yeah, that specifically he didn't want that one out. Right. And she's like, okay, but we have to, though.
There. We found some logic.
There we go. But you know what wasn't logical? Dorcas trying to use magic to free the fucking unicorn when he had the keys in his pocket the whole fucking time.
He just wanted to see if he could do it.
He couldn't. Turns out he couldn't.
He couldn't. He shrunk the cage. And at one of the points where the unicorn could... get sassy because this cage is shrinking around her and now she can't stand up straight or anything anymore. She's just like, oh, but it's okay because what you did was real magic. It was wrong, but it was real magic. Yeah, please try again.
Everybody needed to stop coddling Schmendrick.
They do pretty quickly.
No, I don't think that's
true. Well, I guess trying to do magic, they don't. But like anything else, it's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Right. They treat him. Like It's actually kind of...
what do you mean, though? What am I doing that's so wrong?
I mean, he does have... he gets that kind of, like, Ed Norton rap. Mm. Yeah. Not Edward Norton.
Where no one likes him and
yeah.
And he doesn't want to do press for movies. And,
right. Everyone in this movie is just trying to find their way in the world in their own different ways.
Everyone's a hero in their own way.
But in reality, everyone is Gaius Baltar.
It's true. So, we let the harpy out.
Who let the harpy out? Who?
The unicorn. Yeah. Unicorn let the harpy out.
And she almost paid for it.
Yep.
But instead, the Igor guy gets killed, and Mommy Fortuna gets killed.
Well, Mommy Fortuna died the death she wanted to die. Everybody warned her about having that harpy, but she's like, no one else has ever captured a harpy. Yep. Even when this harpy kills me, it's going to know for all of eternity I'm the one that owned it.
But you know who didn't get to die the way they wanted to? The henchman.
Yeah.
I don't think he wanted to die at all.
Right. Exactly.
He was still trying to figure out why a raven was like a writing desk. Which is like the oldest riddle ever that I still don't know the answer to. I don't know how many times I've heard that riddle, but no one ever answers it. I've
never heard that before.
I've heard it before. I'm trying to think. I think I knew the answer.
I've heard it a lot, but it's always, why is a raven like a writing desk? And it's always a thing that's put into movies. Like, oh, here's a riddle. And no one ever answers it.
Well, there you go. No one knows.
I think it has to do with Poe. Well,
I think so, too. I would think so, too, yeah. But...
And Dorcas, like, oh, I keep calling him Dorcas because I have as Dorcas on my notes, Shmendrick.
Whatever, it's fine.
It's basically the same name. It's like, I want to tag along on your journey.
Well, first, he's like, run, run, we got to go. And the unicorn is like, no.
No.
You don't run from an immortal, you will attract its
attention.
It's like
a T-Rex.
Or a Velociraptor.
No, Velociraptors can see you either way. That's why it's a clever girl.
I was going to say it's more like a bear. You're not supposed to run from a bear or other predators because it entices them to chase you.
And they build up an appetite.
Even if they weren't going to, if you're running,
Are you telling me the chimp with the foot bandage wouldn't run after me if I ran?
Maybe. I don't know. That one was a little sad and I think just wanted to get out of there.
I don't understand. But it moved fine when it was escaping, even though it had a bandage on its foot.
It had maybe a twisted foot.
Maybe it was for aesthetics reasons.
It also gave the snake a dirty look as it walked past it. I don't know if you noticed that. Like, the snake's, like, slithering by and the chimp goes...
You mean the dragon?
Yes, the dragon. Just gave it, like, the dirtiest look. Like, fuck you, snake.
Maybe the snake bit his foot.
That's why his foot is matched. I felt saddest for the lion. The lion looked bad.
You mean the manticore?
Yes, the manticore lion looked bad.
It's kind of a bummer that the manticore wasn't real.
Right? I kind of wish more of the animals were real.
Hey, you got a fucking unicorn, you can't have a manticore?
Yeah.
And we find out later that dragons do in fact exist in the world too, so.
Well, you can't fit them in that
world. Well, they did. But then Jeff Bridges killed the last one. And gave a chunk of it to the unicorn to try to woo it.
As you do.
Yeah. Hey, here's a piece of dragon.
There's a lot of weird masculinity tropes in this movie,
you know,
too.
You know what that doesn't work on? Any Targaryen.
Or people in general.
Well, it's also hard to come by a piece of dragon.
That's fair.
I mean, you got to think of who he was raised by.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure we'll get to that.
We will.
Yeah.
Jesus. What the fuck?
So then, yeah, we get the band of outlaws that capture Dorcas and try to feed him the brightest pink rat soup I have ever seen.
It's like bubble gum there.
Yeah.
Probably.
Rats and bubble gum.
I think that's
actually
a
thing. It's like borscht. It probably had beets in it, too.
And this is the first time we meet Mary.
Ah, yes, Mary. She's one of my favorite characters.
She's
the one that a lot of us relate to as middle-aged women watching this movie
again. Literally, my initial reaction to Mary was, she needs conditioner and maybe an orgasm.
I thought it was Molly.
It is Molly.
Did I say Mary?
Yeah.
Molly, then.
I know I wasn't, like,
I didn't
super
even,
invested
I didn't
here,
even
but
catch
like,
that. He said Mary, and I was like, that doesn't sound familiar, but I know what he's
talking
about.
I have her as Mary in my notes.
Well,
that's
her
so
name's Molly.
We don't. Yeah, I don't think we get her name until later on anyway.
Yeah, but yeah, that hair. That hair, though.
She knows what she is, and she says it later.
Wait, yeah. But did we skip the part with the tree?
No. That's after.
Oh, that. Is it right after?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because
they chain him to the tree.
I think I moved some stuff around in my notes. Yeah.
No, we get the story of the guy, and did you notice, like, the one of, what was that guy's name?
I don't remember any of the outlaws' names.
The lead outlaw.
Okay.
Whatever his name was. Yeah, man. Molly's man. His one henchman is very weirdly looks like a Mexican stereotype. It looks like he's wearing like a sombrero and everything. I'm like, what is this guy doing in this band of bandits?
One of his band of bandits also looks like Dobby. The house elf.
Captain Cully, that's the guy's name. I found it in my notes. Yeah. But yeah, like his band of misfits kind of didn't fit the era, which was interesting.
The era of the fictional place where all these creatures live in is a cartoon.
It's very like Renaissance.
All I gotta say is that if Luis Guzman would have been actively acting at the time, he would have been that guy.
I mean, he didn't have any lines, so I think that would have been even more interesting.
Live action Last Unicorn starring Luis Guzman. Let's do it.
And then, yeah, Dorcas makes holograms like it's nothing. But the holograms, and these people are freaking out, like, it's Robin Hood! And all they're doing is walking in a straight line through the fire.
Yeah, we need to follow these obviously ghostly apparitions. I mean, it is pretty interesting. I mean, obviously, it's not something you expect to see anyway. It's a cool trick.
Think about that. Again, we'll say that time, which is Renaissance and also fake. But, like, imagine if somebody in Renaissance times had created a fucking hologram. Huh. Like, they'd never seen movies or anything at that point. So that would have been insane.
Oh, no, I get that. But to believe that they were really them, even though they were very stoically walking through the fire and, like, not moving.
I don't know if they believe they were really them as much as just wanted to. Like, this is clearly fake, but this is the coolest thing I've seen in my miserable bandit life. So please let me join you because it is an image of my hero.
I don't doubt that for a second. Mm-hmm. That's the most interesting thing they've ever seen.
That's that, or, you know, Molly's hair in the morning.
Leave Molly alone. Molly's great.
Molly actually isn't that great.
Mm-hmm. All of the women's hair does that. And even the unicorns.
It's not even Molly's hair that bothers me. It's her treatment of Schmendrick multiple times for this movie.
Because you like Schmendrick?
No, because she's wrong and she's treating him like he's a piece of shit.
Well, she's not wrong about that.
We'll get to what really pisses me off about that situation in a sec. But the lead bandit, whatever his name was again.
Captain Cully.
Cully is like, well, you fucker. And they chain him to a tree because of his holograms. Face first. Right? And it's just between two big old burls.
This is also, we'll get to the burls, but this is also the first time that Schmendrick's magic actually does something that makes sense and is awe-inspiring, and it's because he says, magic, do what you will, as opposed to trying to bend it to his will. He's just like, do your thing, magic. And this happens a couple times.
Well, and yeah, it's very much the idea of, I'm not going to be the one in control here, and I'm okay with that. Letting go of control is his thing, and that's great. He does that once he's chained to the tree, and then I just put, kids, close your eyes.
I put tree with gross ant cleavage.
This tree, this drag queen whatever tree, is burned into a core memory for me. Again, I saw this movie probably for the first time when I was like 5 or 6 years old. This is a movie at the video store my mom wouldn't let me rent anymore because it's all I ever wanted to watch when I was little. But I will always remember how weird this tree was.
You know what's interesting is I think the tree and the butterfly should have gotten together.
Maybe.
They were both so thirsty.
Well, I think the prince should have gotten in on that too.
Oh, the prince was thirsty too. Uh-huh.
The prince was lonely.
We're going to talk about the issues with the prince later, I'm sure. And then we get the unicorn coming back because Schmendrick is like, unicorn, where are you? And he comes back and Molly goes off on the unicorn. And I'm sorry, but she blamed her shitty life on the unicorn, and I'm like, this is grade A gaslighting.
Oh, right? Yeah, yeah. Weird lady that has been sitting around for 20 years just waiting for a unicorn to cross her path.
Right.
Wow. Can you believe her luck, though?
Yeah.
By doing fuck all for 2 decades, she somehow succeeded. And even more so, it's the last unicorn in the world, don't you know?
Right. Like, this is the first point where I started disliking Molly.
This is just where people just, again, are just saying things and it becomes reality. Like,
but you can't blame the unicorn for your entire failing, all your failings in your life. But
you mean think she was actually blaming the unicorn? Yes. Or she was just spitting out her own inner turmoil? Because that's how I always read it. Idiot.
She literally got an apology from the unicorn because she pushed her that hard with it, you know?
None of that made any damn sense.
Oh, it just made me angry.
Like, you should be angry because you chose an empty existence.
Did she choose it, though? You don't know Molly's past. I don't know what she's been through.
The only thing we know about her past is there weren't any fucking unicorns in it. Look, I will say Molly has some redemption later on for me, but this middle part of the movie, she really pisses me off.
Okay.
Yeah, but then she's also the one who really encourages Schmendrick.
Yeah.
Just by saying, no, you totally have real magic. So now you do. Made it so. We manifest destiny in this movie. Just by saying things.
So, I mean, it's a magical world. And the most magical thing, you're all used to see all of your hopes and dreams after you've let them die, confronting you to be like, oh, I had given up on this amazing thing and my life is this because I didn't see any hope and I had given up completely. And now here it fucking is in front of me. Like, that's how I
interpret it. But to blame the hopes and dreams.
Well, it's a physical manifestation of the hopes and dreams. Normally you don't get that. However, I'm sure if I just sat here and thought about it for like 10 minutes, which I'm not going to do, I could think of many, many, many other examples of people getting mad at something beautiful happening to them when they'd lost all of their hope.
I get that.
This would be like sitting...
But this is an actual humanized character that she's letting this out on. And it is not fair to the unicorn. It's in like, any way.
I mean, I don't think the unicorn really cared that much. We've already talked about how she doesn't really have the trappings of human emotion. Yeah, she doesn't experience regret.
She's very curt.
Well, I mean, she's...
But not, I mean, not meaning
pretty
anything.
Pretty sure at this point in time, she's married to Woody Allen, so that makes sense.
But,
I don't think they ever got married.
Were they?
I don't think they were ever married.
No. Okay. Well, then living with Woody Allen.
But
Mia Farrow is who we're talking about.
But this is like sitting out in a parking lot at a convenience store and being like, man, I'm going to get rich. I'm just going to sit here and money will fall. And meanwhile, you don't even go into the convenience store to buy a lottery ticket.
Right.
Like, this is doing absolutely nothing to...
You're just describing pursue. All the people that I know that think they can manifest everything.
I mean, that is
kind of
what it,
action.
Yeah, right. They've read The Gift.
Right.
But it's, good job.
But it's they want to manifest something, but then when they come across that thing later after they failed, it's that thing's fault. It's not their fault.
And also, that's a very modern lens that we're putting on something that was written in 1982.
That's fair.
Or that was written in 1968, which is when the book came out. I don't know how closely this follows.
That's totally, what story in the book.
Well, in that
totally
case,
a fair point.
It saw the future of America while using the band America.
This movie knew trickle down economics were coming.
Yeah, yeah. This is a pre-Reagan movie.
No, it's a right at it's the at the beginning. Of Reagan, yeah.
Well, I'm sure it was written, conceived of, and whatnot pre-Reagan.
And then we see the castle for the first time, and it's like, what the fuck kind of castle is that? Who builds a castle on top of that place?
Wait, oh, so yeah, so now the unicorn is an Elseworlds variant Barbie that's gone all Britney
Murphy. Not yet. Because we see the distance, right. And then we get another travel montage.
Thank you.
And then we get the Red Bull.
We needed a travel montage even though you see the castle.
Yep. And then the fucking Red Bull is no joke, dude. That thing is nasty.
Defeat it.
The Red Bull scared me as a kid. The Red Bull and the Harpy both scared me when I was little.
You defeat the Red Bull and you get wings.
But right. So like the unicorn has zero chance against the Red Bull.
Doesn't seem like anything has much of a chance against the Red Bull.
And then Molly's like, Dorcas, do some magic or something. Save her.
For anyone who hasn't seen this movie or maybe hasn't seen it in a long time, to give it a comparison, the Red Bull is essentially a Balrog.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
That didn't help me.
Balrog from Lord of the Rings.
I don't know how you've never seen Lord of the Rings.
I have, but I don't remember.
It's a big fire demon with horns.
Okay. With horns.
Yeah, okay.
It's a big bull fire demon.
It's the one that fights Gandalf.
Do you have any idea how many characters and things are in these?
It's the one that fights Gandalf in Moria.
You shall not pass.
Just say that.
That's the Balrog.
Yeah.
then I know.
Okay.
She's like, Dorcas, do some magic. Dorcas does magic and he turns her into a naked chick.
Well, this is the second time he says, magic, do what you will, because he doesn't know what else to do.
And immediately Molly goes off on him. And I literally put, no one can do right by Molly. It's everyone else's fault.
Molly goes off on him. Molly is a woman in these times. I mean, being a woman in the times we're in now. Yes. And to see the most powerful, beautiful, majestic thing in the world or that you could even conceive of. Turned into something as I'm sure how she feels is as small and insignificant and unpowerful as a woman, that would be infuriating.
Yeah,
especially
but
a woman
thing.
Who hung out for two decades
Dorcas
in the forest for no
did
reason.
Did the only thing he could do, saved her from the Red Bull, and then Molly goes off on him, and then she wakes the soon to be Amalthea wakes up and also goes off on Dorcas, and I go, why is everyone blaming Dorcas? He did good. Fuck y'all.
Because Molly knows and says, if you leave her in this body, she will go mad. She will go absolutely insane.
She will. She'll just fall in love with a guy that has zero emotional connection.
And Amalthea / the unicorn, she literally says, I can feel this body dying all around me. She's not herself anymore. She's not even anything she can conceive of.
The blame on Schmendrick, I will say the right name this time, the blame on Schmendrick is completely uncalled for.
It's not like he knows that.
He saved her from the situation she was in the only way that he could do it, and then gets blamed for it.
Well, and he doesn't know that if she's not in that in the unicorn form, she's gonna die. Or whatever.
Right.
He's just like, whatever. What do they call it?
Figuration?
No.
Mogrification?
Yes, transmogrification.
It's just so unfair towards him constantly with this shit. And it's like, dude, if he wasn't there, she would have been in the ocean by now.
Especially.
And that's what she would have chosen. He took away her choice.
Oh, so this is a. So Schmendrick's a Republican.
I'm just saying that's you're all
she
defensive.
Wanted, no, but wouldn't that be her choice? Because her whole goal was saving the other unicorn.
But she literally says it. I wish you had just let the bull take me.
Well,
I would have preferred it.
But had she said that ahead of time, like, hey, if your options are, how the fuck is he supposed to know?
I mean, when he saved her, she had already, and I'm not saying. You know, the movie would have ended there and then we wouldn't have gotten the rest of the movie. But like,
well, maybe
she had already resigned to her fate. Like, fine, drive me to the ocean. She at that point would have at least been with all of her brothers and sisters.
Yeah, but her tune changes awfully fucking fast.
This is also, again, very abbreviated. It's a little kid's movie. We don't get a whole lot of huge arcs for character development. It happens very, very quickly with the mind changing of things.
Schmendrick needs to conjure himself a hat that isn't just a construction paper dunce cap.
That's fair. He just needs some swagger. Like, he's not a bad wizard, obviously.
Like, he's like short, shaggy, dressed up as a dungeon master.
What you need, Charlie Brown, is confidence.
This actually made me think of the movie Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown. Because it's some of like the music and the animation.
That one.
It
was the one where they went to camp. and then they get lost in the woods.
Oh no!
Oh yeah!
I don't think I ever saw.
It was my favorite of them.
If it's not Bon Voyage or No Dogs Allowed, that
Bon Voyage always creeped me out.
Bon Voyage.
I don't know any of these Charlie Brown movies.
You've never seen Bon Voyage, Charlie Brown?
It's when they go to France and they stay in an old estate.
I know the holiday specials.
The Chateau.
I know the holiday specials. I know the Great Pumpkin, and I know the Charlie Brown Christmas Tree. Oh, and that's pretty much it.
Race for Your Life is my favorite.
Bon Voyage Charlie Brown is pretty messed up.
They wake up in the woods covered in snow, and immediately they're trying to eat breakfast, and it's all cold cereal and peppermint patties. Like, where's the rolled oats? Where's the pancakes? Where's all this? Like, why don't we have a full spread breakfast?
You know what? Molly is peppermint patty.
That's fair. That's fair.
She's demanding. She doesn't know what she wants. She's just like... One second she's complimenting you, and then she's encouraging you, and the next she shits all over you with... Now we need Lucy to do some psychiatry.
Yeah, pull the football out from Schmendrick's...
We don't need Lucy. I never liked Lucy.
Nobody ever liked Lucy.
You're not supposed to like Lucy.
Better than Peppermint Patty.
So, Schmendrick does the thing, the only thing he can think of, and changes the unicorn into a woman.
And saves... The future. Let's be real. And yeah, then they're like, okay, now let's walk up to the castle. That's all scary and where the Red Bull lives.
Yeah.
Smart.
Well, that's where they were going, to find the Red Bull and to find the unicorns.
I know.
That was the whole point of this journey, was to go meet the king and figure out what was going on.
Well, and if he doesn't change her into a woman, then they don't get to just walk up there. Two of them do.
Dude, this castle is like Grayskull to infinity.
It's like Grayskull meets Dragonstone.
It's so fucking creepy and crusty and weird.
And that's just the inhabitants.
I like how the king and the prince are the two guards. So stupid. Yeah.
That was like...
He does say at some point, I have four kings guard. I don't know who they are.
I mean,
we
cat?
Never see them. Well, there's the wizard.
The wizard that knows Schmendrick. He's like, oh, Schmendrick.
Oh, I feel like he's patronizing him, though.
Yes, but he knows him, at least. Yeah. So that puts them at some sort of...
I mean, maybe all wizards know each other.
Yeah,
he's also supposed to be one of the most powerful wizards, so maybe he's just like, oh, yeah,
I remember you around the academy, you little shit.
But much like the two guys at the beginning of the movie, we see him once and then he goes away forever.
Yeah. So is King Haggard, is that his given name, or is that something he earned?
I think it's probably his given name, and much like Schmendrick, it's very on the nose.
Okay. I think he should
King
be
Haggard.
Called, if they're going to make it that on the nose, he should be called Living Dead King.
Who's like 100 and some years old, voiced by Christopher Lee.
And why do I get the feeling that Marbook has been waiting to say... I won't be backdoored so easily for a really long time.
I didn't even catch that.
I didn't either. What does that in reference to?
That's when the king's like, okay, well, this is our new wizard. And he's like, I won't be backdoored so easily.
And then he was.
Is that what he actually said?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe he said
but
something
it's not,
else.
I mean,
misheard.
I know what he means by that. He just means like he's not going to, like rushed somebody's
out,
not going to come
out the
through
the back door.
Well, or somebody's not going to
sneak in through the back door and take his job.
Yeah.
And then.
Well, we find out Haggard is the way he is, and this castle is the way it is, and all of the things because nothing. Nothing brings this man joy.
He's the Grinch, but without
he doesn't
a heart at all.
Care, but he wants to care. He just
if he's the Grinch,
doesn't.
Does that make Jeff Bridges the dog?
Maybe. But yeah, so he's trying desperately to care, to find joy, to feel anything.
I want to be honest. Jeff Bridges' voice as the prince just
I didn't like
it. Doesn't fit his body. Like, it's just, his voice doesn't fit the animated body, and it's so weird to me. And it's because Jeff Bridges' voice is so iconic, and you know what he looks like.
See, this, because it's, you know, this movie's over 40 years old, Jeff Bridges was a much younger man, it doesn't sound nearly as Jeff Bridges Jeff Bridges does now. Like, it doesn't sound like the dude.
Only Mia Farrow really sounds like that now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got all the Jeff Bridges in it.
Because Christopher Lee's voice got
Christopher
deeper.
Lee still sounds like Christopher Lee. But
it's like a, I don't know, it just didn't have it.
I will say also, like, Jeff Bridges' character is as horny as the butterfly in the tree. Just not as externally showing it. Like, it's, like, he's immediately like, I want to fuck that. As soon as he sees...
I mean, he wants to marry that. But also...
He says that, but, like, here's the thing. Like, he even says, she has never said a word to me. Right? They have zero interaction, and he's like, I love her.
He doesn't say, but he does, like... He does think enough to write her poetry for some reason.
He writes her poetry, he fights dragons for, he does everything he can to get her. Yes, but also, if you were the prince and you were, I don't know how old he's supposed to be, 20, and your only other human connection was King Haggard and that wizard, and then suddenly someone, anyone your age... And who also happens to be beautiful and mysterious and interesting, appears in the castle.
Has a big red sore on her forehead.
Of course you're going to be fucking infatuated.
To the point where he goes and kills a dragon. By the way, that dragon, fantastic mustache. Like, that was a Tom Selleck level mustache on that dragon.
Mustache on that dragon.
How can you compare an animated mustache to the artistry of what because Tom Selleck managed to
It was full and shapely.
It was more of a kung fu mustache. Like, that was definitely an Asian dragon, only because of the style in which
the dragon
was
drawn.
Yes, it
was more of a snake-like dragon. I get what you were saying there.
I saw the look on your face before I finished talking.
But the mustache itself, not the beard was very kung fu style, that like little thin wisp. But the mustache itself was like a Pringles man mustache.
Well, and the animators on this were all, I think, Japanese,
yeah.
So makes sense that they're stylistically... would look
but I'm
Japanese.
Saying it's an extra large sin to kill a dragon with that kind of facial hair.
Yeah.
Well, that's why it was going to be more valuable.
And so he gives her a chunk of the dragon. It doesn't even look like it's like the head or something interesting. It's just like a chunk of dragon.
Also,
here's the pancreas of a dragon.
It's got diabetes now.
Before going back to the prince, before we started getting movies like Frozen and like Brave and whatnot, nobody had a problem with these princesses.
I would say Shrek.
Nobody had a problem with these princesses seeing a man one time and immediately falling in love and wanting to give up everything for them. But when a prince does it, he's ridiculous. That's the stupidest representation I've ever seen.
No, it's stupid on both accounts.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
So after he gives the dragon parts to her and she doesn't want it, he's in the kitchen parts. Complaining to Molly, trying to... peel potatoes, and I literally he cuts himself, and I'm like, he kills dragons and can't use a paring knife.
No, nobody ever taught him how.
But he can use a sword.
It's different.
It is different.
But also, this is one of the animation
I'm trying
issues.
To picture my father, who can fix absolutely anything, trying to peel potatoes and cook dinner, and he would probably cut himself.
Here comes my best part about the best part about this, though, is after she scolds him and tells him to cut away from himself, the animation of her peeling the potatoes is her literally peeling towards herself.
Maybe that's a subtle joke. Just peel away. You don't know what you're doing. Peel away. My mom has always taught me to peel away from myself. But when my mom peels, she uses a paring knife. And she's always cutting towards her thumb. And she's never cut herself. But I cannot watch her do it.
Well, she's mastered it.
She has mastered it. She's been doing it for 70 years.
Ouch.
Probably not 70. Probably 65.
Take that, Mom.
So, yeah, Molly.
I love you, Mom.
Molly's like, well, just tell her how you feel. And then, like, we get this... moment where you see that she the unicorn, I can't remember her name as a person again.
Amalfi, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah, why is she Italian?
Why not?
I don't know.
Schmendrick liked that name. I don't know.
Yeah, but she started to have like amnesia.
I think that actually is an Italian island.
Amalfi Coast.
The Amalfi Coast. Oh, yeah. But then like, yeah, she starts singing when the prince shows up, and I'm like, this movie's about puberty, right? She literally sings about becoming a woman.
I don't think it's about puberty.
I think it's a little bit about puberty.
But so this is the first time, this is one of the first musical, not one of the first musical numbers, but one of the first musical numbers that the characters are singing.
Yeah, that's just a random change too.
Yep,
yeah, that
random,
was really threw me off.
I'm not going to tell you that wasn't weird. I agree with you guys there, but... we get to hear Mia Farrow's lovely, lovely singing voice.
And Jeff Bridges' lovely, lovely singing voice.
Jeff Bridges' singing voice was fine. Mia Farrow's singing voice was so bad that the next time this character sang a reprise of the same song, it was a different person singing. I don't know. Yeah. I'd be interested to hear the story of, like, did Mia Farrow insist on singing? And then when it came time to re-record, they're like, we're not going to let her do that again. Or I don't know how that came about. But
the second time, Jeff Bridges is there too. So it's like maybe she just didn't have to be as loud. And she could just maybe...
The second time was a completely different singer because that woman was on key and had a different voice. And I'm assuming the singers are like the two credited because it gives all the big voice names. And like, and also with, and there were a man and a woman's name at the in the credits. They're probably the singers.
So yeah, we get that whole love song thing. And then we get Molly and the cat. And all of a sudden the cat's talking to Molly. And I'm like, wait, the cat can talk? And it's literally a pirate.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's got a peg leg and an eye patch.
But the fact that they decided to make the cat a pirate is wild to me.
It is it was the most random thing in the entire film. No. But I was like,
I'm here for it. I love the cat.
I'm like, hell yeah.
The most random thing was the end of this scene because the cat info dumps on Molly everything that they need to do.
Yeah,
right?
Yes.
It does the same function as the butterfly earlier.
Exactly.
But what's weird is the cat saying it in riddles, kind of like the butterfly does, and Molly turns to it at the end of the scene and just goes, why must you always speak in riddles? I'm like, this is the first conversation we've seen with the fucking cat. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but you don't know how many conversations she's had with the cat off screen.
There needed to be more.
Yes, yes, yes. More cat.
More pirate cat. This is a problem that I have as an adult watching a lot of these kids' movies from that era is that they are very abbreviated. I get that.
Well, what's weird is this movie could have been 20 minutes shorter if they just cut out all the montages.
Fair.
If they would have...
But you had to know how far they were journeying.
If they would have just replaced the musical numbers with some exposition and character development,
right,
that would have been... just fine.
Yeah, like, they could have cut one of the songs and had a scene where Schmendrick is wiping his ass and the cat walks in and starts talking and he goes, holy fuck, a talking cat!
Or better yet, the pirate cat becomes the real villain and makes King Haggard walk the plank.
You know what we needed?
Right into the pool of unicorns.
We should have had the wave of unicorns at the end, and the cat should have had a ship on top of the fucking wave.
Yeah, that would have been ridiculous. We did skip over a kind of a big detail, though, when they walk into the castle, when they first get there.
Oh, all the faces in the walls and stuff?
No, King Haggard wanting to know who this lady is. And who and what she is.
He goes, I can't see my reflection in your eyes.
Yeah, I can't see my reflection. What is wrong with your eyes? I can't see my reflection in your eyes. Like, he knows there's something up with her.
They could have written a song about that. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
That's a cool line.
That is cool. Villain songs are great in
movies. It was also kind of nice to see a bit of respect there between him and her. Because when he approaches her and she says... She just yells at him, no. And he's like, I'm not going to touch you. Like,
yes.
It was a weird, soft, like, I'm going to respect your space. I'm not going to touch you kind of thing.
Fair
which
enough.
You don't see a lot in this movie in general, even with, you know, Schmendrick.
I mean, Schmendrick doesn't touch anybody.
His reaction to the tree was so nonchalant where she's, oh, I love you, and squeezing him between her boobs. And he's all just like, ah, crap, I'm engaged to a fern or whatever he said. Engaged to a...
Oh,
not a larch.
No. It was, because it was the wrong kind of tree, because it was a conifer. Some sort of pine or fir, or Douglas fir.
Douglas fir. I'm engaged to a Douglas fir. Like, he's so nonplussed
by what happened. My thought was, that's not a Douglas fir.
No, it wasn't.
So, yeah, after the cat scene, we get another montage, and then we've got Jeff Bridges' character kissing a horse. Because she's a unicorn.
Okay, I'm like, what?
They kiss, and, you know, she's a horse.
Well, these montages are also, again, I'm going to say it for the 30th time, this movie is very abbreviated. So these montages are easy little ways to be like, time has passed. This is what's happened. I'm assuming this book was probably
better.
Longer not than with, they wanted to put in a kid's movie.
Not with a bunch of crap songs.
More Pirate Cat?
Oh,
that'd be great. I want to read the book.
You promised me more Pirate Cat. I will read the book.
Yeah. Hashtag more Pirate Cat. So then we get a brief, like, because we're talking about, like, how to get into the lair of the Red Bull, and they talk about the clock, and they show us this fucking scary fucking clock.
Mm-hmm. With a dragon eating it.
Yeah.
Dragon, lizard, demon
thing.
That thing
was wild.
I want to know more about this castle. I want to know where it came from. I want to know if it was ever beautiful, if it's something that King Haggard took over, if it's something that he had...
I don't know
built.
If that castle could have ever been beautiful.
I also want to know why there's a skeleton up on a shelf.
That wants like, wine?
It was an elf.
Did it... Was this part of a battle and it died up there? And if so, how did it get up there? And then how long was it there before it was just a skeleton that they've just been living with this corpse in the clock room?
Before we get to the really fucking annoying skeleton, we get the scene where she's talking to Molly on the veranda, and old boy King Haggard is on the higher veranda, and for some reason they don't see him, and she just opens up about being a unicorn and all this shit, and he's like, "I knew it," and then he confronts her, and he's like, "All of the unicorns are down there in the ocean."
He doesn't respect her space this time, which is kind of weird, but then notices. I can see my reflection in your eyes. I must have been mistaken. I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I thought,
and then
but I guess not.
He, as soon as he leaves, like the exact moment he leaves, Schmendrick shows up. And I'm like, do they run into each other on the stairwell? What?
Suspension of disbelief for a child's cartoon, Nick.
He's a magician.
Are you wondering how Wile E. Coyote constantly survives the anvil, too? It's a fucking cartoon.
No, because it's Wile E. Coyote. That's what happens.
Uh-huh. Well, this is what happens, okay?
See, there's no track record here, Nick. So we have to, as like everything else in this movie, we just take it as, we take everything as gospel.
Why must it always be in riddles in this movie? So yeah, then we get the fucking most annoying laughing skeleton that's ever been created.
And even though the skeleton was
annoying and was supposed to be annoying, but the fact that it made you this angry
is
fascinating.
Grating.
To me.
It was grating. It was like nails on a chalkboard.
And you didn't think that about Mia Farrow?
No.
Huh.
Also, what a dumb skeleton. Oh yeah, I'll turn water into wine for you. Ooh, focus, focus. Oh, it's so good. Oh, the body of this wine.
Best magic he did the movie. Just a little, not even sleight of hand, just like, you're an idiot here.
I mean, the skeleton doesn't have eyes or a stomach or a tongue.
It was a pretty easy to fool. The weirdest thing about the skeleton to me is the fact that, like, obviously this is somehow animated and... are reanimated, I suppose, and is in league with King Haggard. You would think, like, I'm some dead thing in a dungeon, basically. Yeah. You're in the basement or whatever. But no, like, not this guy who imprisons me down here. My loyalty's with him.
I mean, that's the thing, is I don't know where King Haggard got this castle. I don't know how long that skeleton's been up there. For all I know, it was there when King Haggard took it over and they're old chums.
Probably just a couple Christmases ago.
Yeah.
I also...
How long does it take an elf to go full...
So you're talking about him being in league with King Haggard. One of the things that I thought was interesting as just an animation choice and as a signal for, you know, little kid audience members is anytime anything... is we're supposed to know that something bad is happening, that something is evil, that something is dark, it's red. The castle gets a red hue at one point. The harpy gets a red hue. The bull is red. The eyes of the skeleton turn red.
You know what I thought was an interesting animation choice, especially for kids, was when Dorcas changes her back into a unicorn, the first thing to happen is her clothes disappear.
But do you want to see Unicorn still wearing that dress?
No, I wanted to Hulk through the dress.
Oh, I just thought there weren't enough.
I mean, just because we had to have two frames of a naked girl before the transformation.
Well, there weren't. Yeah, see, you're just mad because there weren't some
non-animal breasts.
Yeah, that's what I'm like. Breasts. Man, I need to see some non-tree breasts right here. No, it was so
weird. Show me them non-harpy.
It literally, her clothes disappeared before she even started to transform. It was such a weird choice animation-wise.
Probably just a less fuss. If we get rid of these.
I would give that benefit of the doubt for a movie other than the one that had three-titted harpy and boobs in
that it. That was a choice they made.
And they showed her bare ass earlier in the movie.
Yeah, there was a... the 80s were different.
For those of you that did not live in the 80s, the 80s were definitely different.
Yep.
Yeah. In a time when Kajagoogoo could have a hit song, you could have... You could have a tree with breasts smothering a man with bosoms as though it's your aunt at the family reunion.
Oh, it was very aunt bosomy. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think of it as transvestite. I thought of it as like an elder aunt.
I think it was more the way the tree looked like it was costumed and the hair and the eyelashes and everything that gave drag queen to me.
Fair enough.
Or Ursula.
Ursula, yeah. Very Ursula.
Which was modeled after a drag queen, so that makes sense.
Really?
That makes sense.
Wasn't Ursula modeled after Divine?
Oh, awesome.
I can see that.
I'm pretty sure.
Man, I like both the people.
how did those words come out of your mouth and not Dave's?
Because I
don't know.
I don't think I've ever actually watched Little Mermaid.
Sometimes I know fun facts.
You have to watch Little Mermaid.
I've seen parts of it.
Just for Ursula. Ursula's the best part of the movie.
Well, you know what it is? It's weird because, like, I had a crush on Alyssa Milano, and it's weird to, like, have an animated crush. That's just creepy.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you say so. I had a crush on Trent from Daria, so whatever.
A lot of people had a crush. This is the weirdest one. A lot of people had a crush on Lola Bunny from Space Jam.
I also thought...
I've never seen that.
I also thought...
You've never seen the original Space Jam?
Why would I want to?
It's not great.
It's going on the list.
No, it's not.
It is going on the list.
I also thought the fox from the animated Robin Hood was super handsome.
I mean, all of the characters were slightly sexy in that movie.
It was weird.
Like, Maid Marian was sexy?
That's like people having a crush on Spirit, the horse, in that movie, Spirit.
They're oh,
like,
gross.
Why is that, that's gross.
Why is
that's
that horse weird. Handsome?
Or, like, people having a crush on BoJack Horseman.
I have an appreciation.
I, too, have an appreciation.
What's interesting is you love this movie where a man makes out with a unicorn.
But
on a previous podcast that we did together, you had a problem with a woman and a dog having sex.
I had
interspecies erotica.
Because the dog was named Mr. Peanut Butter and was still a dog. This unicorn was at least in a human body.
I wonder if when she transformed back, Jeff Bridges was like, oh shit, she was a horse?
He knew. Man.
Dude, there's the part where they're telling...
They tell him and he says, I love who I love.
He wants to bang the
horse. Mr. Peanut Butter loves who he loves.
The dude wants some horse's ass.
It wasn't Mr. Peanut Butter that bothered me. It was, what's her face, fucking Mr. Peanut Butter.
Oh, so it's the person's fault, not the dog's fault, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's weirder for a human to want to have sex with an animal than it is for an animal to hump a human.
But he's half man.
The part that counts, I guess. But he had a dog head. Well, and his name was Mr. Really. Peanut Butter.
He's just a.
I like that you guys are ridiculing me for being weirded out by bestiality. Somebody is wrong in this conversation, and it's not me. Back to the last unicorn.
I'm not the one who wants to bang a horse.
Okay, legitimate question now, because we're at the finale here of the movie. We see the wave of unicorns in the ocean. Why weren't they narwhals?
There were narwhals in the ocean.
No, I'm just...
They showed them earlier.
No, they did not.
Yes, they did. There's a whole song about narwhals in the ocean, and they showed them swimming.
How did you not remember
it was literally part of one of the songs and montages.
But why weren't the unicorns narwhals when they're in the ocean?
Because narwhals exist as a separate entity in the ocean.
But they're the unicorns of the sea. So then if you put unicorns in the sea, they should be narwhals.
But they're not. Is this because Jessica they're not Simpson the logic? Unicorns of the sea. They're unicorns in the sea. And I'm assuming that they also were probably in some sort of different dimension or something, because like they're another not dimension. Sea creatures.
But they're in this. They're creatures in the sea.
This was also another trope of movies from this era, which is things in the foam on the waves, like the unicorns in the foam on the waves. Speaking of the Little Mermaid, as a child, my dad was put in charge of renting the movie before he came home from work. So he stopped at our local video store and got The Little Mermaid.
With that classic
but
pose.
But he didn't know what The Little Mermaid was, so he rented me the OG Little Mermaid, where she kills herself and becomes foam on the waves.
Oh, shit. I want to see that.
That's
one.
Based off the actual folklore that movie is.
Oh, nice.
It's way darker.
Hans Christian psychopath.
She also does not turn into a narwhal.
She does not. Sorry, spoiler alert for talking about that, but if you haven't seen that movie, just be aware.
So yeah, the Red Bull gets different. Consumed by the sea.
Well, she fights back. Yes. Yeah, she fights. She stands her ground and fights back. Because apparently she had the strength to fight him the whole time. Just no unicorn ever did.
Again.
She would have never gotten to that point if it weren't for Dorcas.
Dorcas could have cast a spell on her that made her realize her potential, and she could have just driven it into the sea, and we could have skipped the whole.
That's not how it
half
works
of the movie.
Dorcas. It's literally music or magic. Do what you will.
That's also not what the unicorn's ever done, because they didn't even know that they were the last unicorn. Even though everyone around her who's never seen her told her that.
So then we get after the bull is defeated, we get all the unicorns just like. Magically going up the side of the cliff, and somehow that causes the castle to collapse.
I gotta be
honest. So I'm assuming a stampede of that size on that castle that's barely hanging on is probably what caused it to crumble.
Well, I put that castle was not up to code.
Also, you know, just the release of all that magic, any number of things. Also, symbolism.
Peacock, sort of cut out on the movie. I wasn't really paying attention.
Oh,
that
you watched on Peacock?
And it, like, you know, sometimes you're watching something and the streaming service will, like, Peacock even though it's not over.
Notoriously glitchy, too.
And Hulu does it a lot, too, where like.
Oh, that's what happened to me when I was trying to watch Mulholland on that free streaming service or whatever.
Yeah, I watched it on Hulu and I had the same issue.
And it would be, like, 3 minutes later, or 3 minutes before the movie or show ends, and like, oh, we're on to the next episode. I'm like, how about you train it to do it when the credits are on,
right.
You piece of shit?
Yeah.
So I technically missed probably a couple minutes at the end, so but I'm like, all right, I get it.
The castle collapses. King Haggard falls with the castle into the ocean.
I'm sure most of what I missed was
another
scene.
And then we get another fucking montage to close the movie out.
But we also skipped, you're talking about... It's kind of an important detail. King Haggard has collected these unicorns because they're the only thing that brings him joy. He admits, the prince isn't my son. I found him on a doorstep, thought I'd never had a son before. Maybe he'll make me happy. He didn't.
Yeah.
But then we don't get anything else out of that again.
I don't know. I think we get enough that, like, hey, he's not my son, and I really get hard while watching drowning unicorns.
Yeah.
I think that says, I mean, that's definitely the most original character tick I've ever heard.
So is the castle's collapse and him falling into the sea a representation of him reaching completion? Seeing
Nick,
unicorns?
Stop it.
He started it.
Stop it.
You said
also,
gets off on watching. Like,
also, the prince dies.
I think that's obvious.
Oh, the prince is
does he die or
I guess
he
doesn't die.
Out?
No, I think he dies. He sacrifices himself to save the unicorn. She, in turn, reawakens him with her horn, because apparently she can do pretty much anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that Prince is up for anything.
As long as you're not a dragon, because he'll just kill you.
I'm DTH.
Yeah. So then,
I'll let you decide what that is.
I'm guessing down to horn, but...
Damn right.
I thought I was warm. Now I'm going to put my sweater back on.
I'm okay. but we get the resolution, and then, Dorcas and Molly stay together. We get a travel montage again to end the movie.
Well, they got to get back home.
Yeah, I guess.
Do they have to? I mean, it kind of seems like where you lived sucked.
They do talk about about the unicorn and her emotions and how she doesn't really have human emotions. Unicorns don't regret this and that. So it's kind of a big deal.
You know who else doesn't
Because they let
have?
The prince know that once she's a unicorn again, she's not going to love him. He sacrifices himself anyway because he loves her. And then she sticks around and Molly's like, you stayed. You stayed. And she's like, well, yeah, like, he saved me. And now she knows she's the only unicorn in existence that knows what both love and regret are.
Yeah, that was... I'll give you the regret thing. I liked that little touch of it. But also, like, you keep saying she doesn't know human emotions. But you know what? You know who else doesn't know human emotions? Vicky from Small Wonders.
Which I've never seen.
There was only one. You're right. Because I can tell you, Jamie was not wondrous in any fucking way. Jamie was the worst.
Yeah, I've still never seen that show. I know what you're talking about.
The greatest bad 80s TV show of all time.
I would watch every episode of that show multiple times in a row, then watch this again.
Oh, that's mean. I mean, it. I would
look. There are at least some episodes
of Small Wonder.
It's look. There's mostly the music, but there's more. I'm just gonna cherry pick a couple.
Yeah. So let's get into our final thoughts about this a little bit.
So, yeah, I would rather listen to the entire audio track of The Room while wearing a blindfold than another second of listening to this.
It's Kill not me. That bad. Jesus.
Kill me now.
Wow.
Let's see. Jeff Bridges can sing a tune. A country tune. That's it.
If I mean,
if,
fair. If you're going to have
a movie later on,
if you're going to have the actors sing, you should make sure you find actors that can sing the songs before you cast them.
Yeah, that's
these two are perfect for each other in that they sing equally moronic lyrics.
Oh man, that's mean. I'm not going to be that mean.
Well, this is just the music. And there was something else about that. I'll get to that.
Oh.
It's fun because the music, while it's in the movie, is not anything that I've ever thought about.
That's
all that
good.
Much.
That's, I couldn't that's not good. Think about it. I didn't get dwell on it as much as
every,
Dave.
Every song is worse than the last. This is the girliest thing I have ever watched, and I watched 2 years of Sunset Beach on NBC.
I mean, this was part of my, you guys keep making me watch boy movies. I'm going to.
I get it. No, I
make
know.
You watch a girl
fair.
Movie.
I'm okay with watching girl movies.
It really was a terrible idea to score an entire film about unicorns using songs that are all about unicorns, using the word unicorn multiple times.
The last
really,
unicorn.
Really not going to bust I'm any alive. Charts with such a niche subject matter.
It. You can't sing any more of that.
Hold on.
Let them come after me and sue me.
One just little weird piece of dialogue other than the backdooring thing. Of course you're of noble birth. The prince says that to...
Boy, take it out of context.
It's like, oh, well, of course you're of noble birth. Otherwise, I wouldn't want to bang you? Is that what this
is? No, he says... Obviously, he's trying to figure out who she is and where she's from, because what he says, of course, you're of noble birth. You're definitely not Schmendrick's niece, because that's how Schmendrick introduces her. Okay. Like, clearly you're royalty. You're not this fool's niece.
Clearly Schmendrick is not royalty.
Well, yes.
Because he's a Dorcas.
And realistically, at that time, you could tell when somebody was from of noble birth.
Yeah, because they'd have,
because they don't wear clothes?
No, because they have all those typical signs of inbred genes.
Not all of them. Well, and not until much later.
You'd have to see who her parents were to find out where she got that mark on her forehead. I don't understand this love story. They
not
don't
a love story.
I know. Well, this was as I was
It's
going.
Not
no,
a love story. It's just
they don't exchange,
acceptance.
They don't. This kind of just is going back to what Nick was saying. But they don't exchange words until their shitty duet. And they instantly fall in love to the point where she wants to stay human and marry this guy.
Yeah.
Then again, this would only be the second weirdest romance for Mia Farrow. It seems the prince would rather.
That's legit.
That's fair.
It seems the prince would rather screw the horse as he loves who he loves. Creep fest for sure.
Here we go. totally at the same beats on that. So my final thoughts were Dorcas was the only one that wasn't a complete asshat moron. The movie feels shallow. I know it's a kid's movie, but we've been spoiled by so many great films that just happen to be for families, i.e. Up, right? And so those are I wanted more from this movie. Like, the premise isn't bad. It's just that, like, it felt lazy the way it was put together.
And you know, we don't have the
nostalgia for it.
Right.
Because I and saw I it that. As a small child.
Sure.
I totally you guys saw it as we, grown 40-something-year-old men. Fair.
But you're always going to hold up.
We all have movies like that. Like Revenge of the Nerds Part 2.
But I can look back on. I mean, I can look back on movies that I have a nostalgia for. Like I said, I've watched The Secret of Nim again as an adult, mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh wow, this is like real short and abbreviated. Doesn't feel nearly as epic. Like it doesn't quite hold up, even though I have the nostalgia for it.
Well, thank Paul Thomas Anderson.
And
for
I can
movies
understand some of the criticisms of this movie because, like, obviously, but also I don't understand a lot of your criticisms of the movie. Like, okay.
What's weird is you talked about movies that are 4 hours long. This movie's an hour and a half, and it felt too long.
I just think that the time that they had was mostly wasted.
Yeah.
Because you have to shoehorn in all these fucking terrible songs that don't move anything along.
Did they have, like, the studio have, like, a contract with them or something that they had to add these songs?
I don't know.
I've read up on this movie a little bit, and that actually might be the case.
Because it
might have been like you can only get funding for this movie if they include this many songs or something.
If
they possibly
do. And if they were consistent on where the songs were coming from, like if they're all in the film organically that the characters are all singing them,
right?
Okay, then
it was a little weird that towards the end it sort of became a musical when it hadn't been the entire time. Yeah. But
and you only get like that like those few numbers and then it's right back to America again.
Because I don't know. This is hand-drawn animation, so it's not like they're cutting a bunch of scenes in editing. I mean, they might have filmed them or recorded them and then cut them later.
There's definitely some awkwardness in the dialogue where there are pauses that where you're like, why is there this long a pause? And I'm guessing they're just matching the animation.
But, yeah.
And Alan Arkin was talking too fast.
Alan Arkin's
the unicorn is unicorn moves around a lot. It's constantly can't stand still. And the weird whinny that I'm pretty sure is like a piccolo playing or something. It's not any sort of a horse sound.
Also, she doesn't like even when the other unicorns come back, she's drawn different than the other unicorns. She's the Jessica Rabbit of the unicorns in that sense. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, I didn't notice that much of a difference, but also we have to recognize her. She has to look somewhat different.
Why? Her name is Unicorn, just like the other unicorn.
I don't know.
They are unicorn.
I don't know if we know.
They have different color hair.
Whether or not her name is Unicorn, or if everybody just calls her Unicorn, because there's a whole thing at the beginning where she's like, "Say my name, please tell me you know my name."
And he says Unicorn, and she accepts that.
Well, I think she says, "You know what I am," but she never says, "Oh yes, that's my name."
Legend.
I am. Say my name. Say my name. Okay.
Is that you, Bay?
I think we need to go into Dave's new segment.
Oh, yeah.
Favorite weirdo?
No.
It doesn't really count because everything's so fucking weird that I think, this is even going to be hard. The pirate cat is just.
That's also mine.
There's just no. I had this formula many, many years ago that it was just not even a formula, but it was like things you need to have a successful B movie. Like you had to have some number of these things. One of them was an Elvis impersonator.
Fair enough.
Okay.
I get that.
A zombie. You know, it's been done, but, you know, that's generally a thing for success. An android, a pirate, and I can't remember what the other thing was. And if you can combine two of those things into one thing.
Like an android pirate?
Yeah.
Or Zombie Elvis.
That was actually
Zombie Elvis. There you go.
I did that. Those are actually the two I did.
Okay.
I actually have a script with Zombie Elvis in it. So
we're waiting for that.
Is Bruce Campbell?
Oh, you've read it already.
Oh.
No. Well, he was a Zombie Elvis impersonator.
Right, right. So yeah. Same pirate cat. How about you? What's your favorite weirdo?
I hadn't really thought about it. They're all pretty weird.
We knew this was coming. It's the new segment in the show. Fair,
did we?
I mean, I had it in my notes. As soon as that cat started talking, I'm like, this is my favorite weirdo of the movie.
And it's actually the same.
I didn't come at this movie with a what are the weirdos thing. I came at it with, this was one of my favorite childhood movies.
Same. The tree is your favorite weirdo.
Yes, the tree is my favorite
weirdo. The tree's bosom is her favorite
weirdo.
The boobs.
Yeah.
All the boobs in the movie are my favorite weirdo.
I think the actor who played the... who was the voice of the cat is also the voice of Marbook, the and a couple others.
There's
it's like a bunch of like minor characters.
There's also a lot of claws and very sharp teeth in this movie.
Yeah, even the bull had sharp teeth, even though bulls don't have sharp teeth.
The bull
teeth.
Was a monster, so yes, whatever.
And I let it go, but I noticed it, is what I'm
but
saying.
But like, even the cat that's a good character is drawn like it would not be nice.
Right.
Mommy Fortuna has all the claws and she's got sharp teeth too.
Yeah, there were a lot of sharp teeth and claws, you're right.
He's a good-hearted pirate cat.
Mm. He is a good-hearted pirate cat.
Looking really, for a pirate cat with a heart of gold.
If I was
King Hagrid had pointy teeth.
That makes sense.
I'd be amazed if he had any teeth.
And claws. He had sharp nails, too.
Well, that's because he was Nosferatu.
Also, everything in this movie had scoliosis. Even the castle.
Yeah. That's an animation choice.
This is Christopher Lee bringing his old Dracula shit to Rankin and
Bass.
They're
like, hey, we want you to play this old-ass king. And he's just like, how much Dracula would you like in this?
All right.
Do you want me to go full?
So full should we give our rankings, or do we have anything more we want to talk about?
I think I got everything out of me.
I think it's score time.
Yeah. Okay.
You want to go first or you want me to go first? I feel like yours is going to be lower than mine.
Okay, fine. 2 1/3.
Wow.
This movie was not that bad,
unicorn,
even if it wasn't your bag.
Unicorn Lucky Charm marshmallows.
Why unicorn Lucky Charm? Because it's just unicorns?
Yeah.
I feel like my score is nicer, but my candy's meaner.
How's candy mean?
My score is higher because I gave it a lot more points for the anime.
Maybe he's going with Goober.
I will say, all right, you know what? I could raise it for Pirate Cat, but but the majority of whatever grade, like, I do like the animation. I do. Yeah. I do think it's a.
I mean, these guys went on to create Studio Ghibli, so like clearly there was something there.
Okay, like one dude out of like the 3,500 or something.
So yeah,
I read the same thing.
So yeah, my score is based off of the fact that I think the animation is excellent, and I did give it some leniency for being a children's movie, despite the fact that I'm like, this is dumb. I gave it 6 dots. Dots because dots are very pretty. And have almost no good flavor to them.
But they stay with you forever.
Yeah, in your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Annoyingly.
Man. You guys are both wrong.
Okay, what is your score?
Hey, not for nothing. Mulholland Drive. David Lynch was nominated for Best Director.
I gave this movie a higher score than Amanda gave Dr. Strangelove.
Wow.
It's because I didn't really like Dr. Strangelove.
And we're not okay in just having this opinion then.
Go for
it's because you both were like, this movie was fucking terrible. I never said that about Dr. Strangelove.
I never said
like,
this movie
was
fucking terrible.
It was fine.
I never used the word fucking terrible.
I never said that the movie's fucking terrible. I said that there are elements of it that are fucking terrible.
Mostly the music for Dave.
The music is the most
offensive
thing.
For me, it's the montages themselves that piss me off.
And just the matter of factness of things having no real explanation. Just like, hey, that guy says it is. It is.
Also, I watched this movie.
I watched Dr. Strangelove.
Maybe.
I told you the whole plot to it. How could I not have watched it?
By the way, I read about this. The backward roll thing?
Yeah.
Totally not planned.
Fucking A, that's
he
wild.
Really delivered that line doing the backward roll. He tripped and then got up and did, and he was actually mad that Kubrick used, and a lot of the takes where he's really like odd, mm-hmm. because he's like, you know, those were supposed to be the throwaway takes. Like, mm-hmm. I can totally imagine Stanley Kubrick telling him like just one more for me.
If you guys don't know what we're talking about, check out our episode on Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, it was the episode before this one. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go ahead and give your 9.7 or whatever you give it.
It's not 9.7. It's 8.
Okay.
8 out of 10 Skittles, just because rainbows and unicorns seem to go together. I really like Skittles. That's been one of my favorite candies since childhood. So I recognize, again, I recognize this movie is far from perfect, but it is a nostalgia piece for me. I still think it has elements to it that I can relate to on a very different level as an adult now. Seemingly those elements pissed you off, Nick, but I can relate to them. But as a child, I just, you know, was big into unicorns. So the whole fantasy thing was just super cool for me. But yeah, Mia Farrow shouldn't have been allowed to sing anything.
I don't think she should be allowed to talk.
Hashtag more pirate cat.
If somebody wants to make a live action Last Unicorn.
Oh, I'd just make a live action Pirate Cat.
Yeah, Pirate Cat origin story.
Or I could just watch Legend, which has a lot of the same elements.
A lot of Pirate Cat?
I mean, it has a giant red demon in the form of Tim Curry and unicorns.
You know what? You almost lost me, and then you said Tim Curry.
Fuck yeah.
So now
Tim Curry as Darkness was my sexual awakening. I was like, why does she not want to have dinner with him? Why doesn't she like this? Weird. I don't get it.
Tim Curry as the concierge in Home Alone 2 was my sexual awakening.
Fair.
Not, all right. Not Frankenfurter.
No, Home Alone 2.
So what are we watching next, Dave? Dave gets to torture me now.
Dave gets to
torture me. Because, you know, he didn't already with Q.
Just you?
I believe in delayed gratification.
I believe in a thing called love.
Speaking of darkness, I wish I had a Tim Curry movie at the ready.
Well, we've all seen Clue.
Loaded Weapon 1.
So no. let me get this straight. Have neither of you guys seen Legend?
Nope.
No.
Okay, I'm going to keep that in mind then.
I don't put it on the list. I was just kidding.
I will.
So we're going to stay in the 80s.
Okay.
Go to with a director who cut his teeth in comedy. Launched, with this particular film, launched a, in my opinion, a career that,
he just launched a career.
Yeah, he always gets the best performances out of actors, and that's is proof in the amount of awards he's won for people, and the amount of great actors he's worked with. Director Jonathan Demme,
okay.
And
Jonathan Demme.
So, I have no idea who we're talking about.
So we're going pre Philadelphia, pre Silence of the Lambs.
And, I know those movies at least. So.
We're going to go with Something Wild with Jeff Daniels, Melanie Griffith, and the emerging Ray Liotta.
It's called Something Wild?
Yes.
Oh, that sounds interesting. I don't even know this movie, but the cast has me intrigued.
Ray Liotta is electric.
So what's the movie about?
Well, Jeff Daniels is this sort of straight-laced kind of guy. He meets Melanie Griffith, who's kind of a wild child, and he just, you know, he's like, oh yeah, this chick's kind of like, and she's sort of dragging him along anywhere, like that cool chick you meet, and she's like, let's go do this, and you're like, I'm scared to death of you, let's do it.
And turns out she's a unicorn.
And Ray Liotta is like her ex.
Oh god.
And even though, like, he's still just like, he kind of just tags along with their date. And is Ray Liotta.
Okay, that sounds interesting. Oh.
All right, you'll have to remind me of what that's called. Something Wild.
So yeah, this is the first movie we're doing where neither Amanda or I have ever heard of the movie.
Yeah, we're getting, okay, I understand I opened Pandora's box with The Last Unicorn and got away from the whole, like, movies that everybody has seen, but somehow one of us hasn't.
Well, but it's supposed to have meaning, and I think that's like, if it has meaning
to
you.
It doesn't really have. Well, I admit that I fell in love with 1986 Melanie Griffith, which I never would have guessed. But it's a film I've only ever seen once, and it was actually in the last few years. And it was just kind of, I saw it before Ray Liotta died. And I was like, man, I thought it started with Goodfellas, and no, this is 4 years earlier, and he just pops.
Okay. Interesting. The only thing I can think of with Melanie Griffith in it is like
Cecil B. Demented.
No,
the first thing that pops into my head is Milk Money.
I knew you. That was the only other one. Not Bonfire of the Vanities.
Nope. Milk Money. Always.
I love
Milk
that
Money.
Movie.
I
feel like I should because there's Ed Harris, but I don't want to see Ed Harris in that kind of a movie.
Oh, okay.
What kind of movie do you want to see Ed Harris in?
There's something where he's just a mean fucker.
Did you ever see Appaloosa?
No.
Oh, he's good in Appaloosa.
Well, he seems like he was born on a Western set, too.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, so we're going to watch Something Wild.
Yeah.
And if you guys have some suggestions for us, you can always... we have a Facebook page now.
Yeah, Films Like the First Time, the Facebook page.
So you can, suggest them there. You can also email us or whatnot.
Yeah, at memoriamdevelopment@gmail.com. Got it right the first time that time.
Good job. Let us know what you think we should watch. If one of us hasn't seen it, we will consider it.
I mean,
obviously, if all three of us...
More.
Yeah, obviously, if all three of us have seen it, it's not part of the
Yeah, it doesn't work thing, that way. Sorry. But unless you get us a special guest that hasn't seen it, and then we'll do it. Like, we'll make the special guest have to slog.
Yeah, like if we were to watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit and we brought Christopher Lloyd on.
Sure.
Well, we can't bring Bob Hoskins on, so.
By the way, that's for, you don't know this, but it's because Christopher Lloyd, in a Q&A session that I attended, did not realize that he was the killer in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yes.
We've all seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit, right?
Yeah, but I'm wondering if he has.
Not really. I've seen parts of it.
Oh, that's going on the list.
I wasn't interested in it.
That one felt like such a given.
That is a movie that everyone keeps telling me I need to watch, and the parts of it that I've seen were not interesting to me, and I was never interested in it.
It's so the seamless combination of animation and live action in that movie is so good.
Yeah, it's something you can't appreciate as much now as you definitely could.
Even if he hasn't seen the movie, Christopher Lloyd's performance is so unhinged and amazing. Oh, it's such a good movie.
That's the end of
this conversation for the radio.
But we're going to get unhinged.
For the radio.
But you're going to get plenty of unhinged with Ray Liotta in Something Wild.
I'm expecting that.
Sure.
So yeah, thank you so much for listening. Like all the things Amanda said, also rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. That way people know that this show is of the toppest quality. Wow. Only one of you.
So's Nick.
Yes, I am of the toughest quality.
I'm still hurt over how much both of you, especially Dave, dislike this movie.
Fair enough.
I didn't expect you to love it the way I did, but I didn't expect you to hate it.
Well, I didn't expect you to hate Dr. Strangelove the way you
hated
it.
I didn't hate it. I just didn't like it. I gave it a 5.
I gave this a 6.
You were generous.
I mean,
it's just something sticks in your craw, you know?
When I watch it, that's what score I gave it. That was what I felt.
Okay, I in the interest of ending this, I'm just going to walk away.
Okay, thank you for listening. Bye.
Memoriam Development.